Today's Bible reading is about the call of the first disciples. And last week's reading, of course, was also about the call of the first disciples. And as I said earlier, the descriptions of these events are really, they're completely different. And there's something that we can learn from last week's account from John. But we learned that last week. And there's something we can learn about this week's account from Matthew. Simon and Andrew consoled themselves. They were doing good, honest work. They were helping the family. They had nothing to be ashamed of, but they still felt the pain. Here they were, men. Sure, they were just teenage boys by today's standards, but they were past the age where boys are considered men. They lived in a small, unknown town. And they had dreamed that they would be picked by a local rabbi to be a disciple. Finally, they would have some respect for their family. Others in their town and surrounding towns would look up to them. But the rabbis had rejected them. The brothers were ready to drop everything. It would have been such an honor to have been called by a rabbi. It would have been such an honor to have been chosen. But not everyone was chosen to learn from the rabbis. And Simon and Andrew were not. And that was that. They mourned. They picked themselves up and they got on with their lives. Everyone needed to eat and their careers were just beginning. And still they felt a sting of rejection. And not far away, two other brothers were feeling that same pain. James and John were on the boat with their father Zebedee. They also had had a dream, and they consoled themselves and looked forward to an important and fulfilling career on the boat. Four rejected men just past 13 years old. No more dreams of the impossible, only the comforts of reality. And then he arrived, this new rabbi, this new teacher. He was preaching a message that a wilderness preacher had been preaching. Was this the same person? Was he a pupil too? Was he the person to follow? He invited them to become disciples. Jesus came and invited these rejected pupils, the ones who had given up. Ones who had given up any hope of ever learning from a rabbi, Jesus invited them to drop everything and to follow him, and they did. These first four of Jesus' disciples, the rest of whom were also a ragtag bunch, were part of Jesus' plan for starting something that changed the world forever. And it may not be exactly accurate to call it, but let's take a look at Jesus' church growth model. How do you think this strategy for church growth would work in our consumer-driven congregation like the church? Not like Union Congregational Church, but in our consumer-driven congregations now. So the pastor adopts somebody else's message, say exactly the same thing that they had said, go into hiding at the first sign of trouble, and start calling leaders from an obscure town with no reputation for leadership. Okay? For the leaders, pick some people with no background in church leadership who have likely been rejected by other church leaders and have had to go into the family business instead. The congregation, consider that they have the brains of fish and the growth plan. Fly by the seat of your pants and do what seems to be right at the time when you do it. Consider this from our reading today. Jesus waited until his cousin, his rival, was in prison before he started a public ministry. But he did it by saying almost exactly the same thing that John said, and doing it in a place that had a history of being a troubled area, a history that had really no respect for leaders. There was little, if any, chance that anyone would notice anything that Jesus was doing in this little town of Galilee, this little area. And the first disciples that Jesus called followed him immediately. And we often put this into, you know, kind of our ideas, like, I don't know if I could drop my nets and go. And that's a legitimate kind of a thought for us. Dropping nets is important when we decide that we want to be God's people. We want to do what God calls us to do. There's some stuff that we ought not to have with us. But these disciples, they were waiting. They'd given up hope, but they were still waiting. Maybe a rabbi will come. They'd been rejected probably by the rabbis. So when they received an invitation, this thing that they had hoped for beyond all hope, they dropped it. They dropped their nets. They dropped everything and immediately left. And sometimes we wonder, what about their parents? What about their families? That their families would have been proud, because their families would have been proud had another rabbi chosen them. Took the chance immediately. And then catching people like fish, this isn't really that fair. I don't think that fish like being caught, you know, in nets or with hooks. And I don't think that Jesus really expected anyone to think of the catching people or making them fishers of men in that way, you know. So what you're going to do is you're going to smother these people and then you're going to eat them. He wasn't thinking that. I mean, he was going for the broader scope and saying, look at how many people you bring up or how many fish come up in those nets. Now, you're going to get so many people that are going to follow me because of you. And then Jesus, I don't think that he had a 6-month, 1-year, 5-year growth plan with established goals and milestones. He did what he did, and then he did some more. He healed people. He went in. At some point, he did go into Jerusalem, and some would argue that Jesus had a 1 or a 3-year plan for getting in trouble and then getting crucified. Like, he knew that from the get-go. But I really think, you know, the 1 or the 3 years, I think Jesus was doing what he knew he could do for as long as he did it, and there was going to come a time when it was time to go to the big city and complete things. I don't think that Jesus could get hired as a church planter today. Imagine Jesus taking the test. You know, what's your experience in ministry? What's your training? I make things out of wood, sometimes stone. And my cousin, he's that preacher that everybody gets mad at. He eats locusts. And what's your plan? I'm gonna start in a small town, and nobody's gonna really hear me for a long time. And then one day they're gonna get mad at me and kill me. Okay, next. Although it's not really even fair to call Jesus a church planter. That was really Paul. We'll talk about Paul later on in the year. Jesus was this initiator. He was the founder, the reason for there even being the church. But sometimes it's fun to look at our assumptions about church and get some Jesus perspective in it. That, you know, God has equipped us already to be the church. God has equipped us to be able to grow. And all the plans in the world are good. Not all the plans, but, you know, the planning is good, and the setting the goals and everything. But if underneath it we want to share Jesus' love with everyone that we meet. If we don't have that underneath it, then it doesn't really matter what the plan is. It's going to be for naught. Here's what I want to focus on today, that Jesus perspective. Jesus called these rejected fishermen to be the leaders. Jesus called these unlikely people to be the ones that he taught. He called the ones who had given up hope to proclaim hope to the world. And listen to that part that Jesus used to call the first disciples. Follow me and I will make you fishers of men. If you were reading along, follow me and I will make you fish for people. The follow me is the part that he said for them to do. But Jesus has this. It isn't follow me and then work hard. He said, I will make you. I call you, and you will be able to do what I tell you to do, what I call you to do. I am the one who makes it possible for you to do this. I do it. That's Jesus. I will make you. So how much pressure is there on Simon and Andrew and James and John? It wasn't work hard, study well, get ready, and someday you can do this. It wasn't, you might be able to do this, just keep trying. I will make you fishers of men. I will make you fish for people. I will make
you.
And just as Jesus called the unlikely ones to be the disciples, just as Jesus called the rejected ones to be the disciples, just as Jesus called the ones who had thrown up their arms and said, I don't know what's going to happen, but I know it isn't going to be that. Jesus calls all of us. I don't know where all of us are in our lives. I don't know where all of us are in thoughts of what's going on and how do you make the church a more vibrant, a less vibrant? How do you make the church grow in numbers? How do you make it grow this way? How do you make it grow that way? How do we affect the lives of others around us? I don't know what we're all thinking on that. Some of us maybe have thrown up our arms and say, hey, I'm making it to church. You better be happy about that. And others are like, I want to do more. And others are just kind of, I don't know. In all the unlikely scenarios, we may not think that what Jesus calls us to do is possible, but Jesus says, I will do it. I do it. We may not think it's probable. We may not be expecting it. We may not even be hoping for it. We may not think we're qualified. We may not think we're the right people. We may think that Jesus is calling the wrong person. Jesus? No, that's not me. But Jesus still calls us, every one of us. And I don't know in what way, shape, or form Jesus calls you or you or you. But I do know that Jesus calls us, and Jesus doesn't leave us to do it on our own. He says, I will make you. I call you. You will be able to do what I call you to do. I am the one who makes it possible for you to do this. I do it. And on our side, it's ready or not, right? Jesus is ready. So let's trust that as we start to sing now, with a new perspective maybe, but let's sing together that Sunday school song. Let's pray first. God, thank you for calling us. Thank you for equipping us. Thank you for being the one who does, so that we can be the ones that are along for the ride. Thank you.